working with these players that have got guaranteed contracts for several years and making all that money. I don't know how much leverage he's got there.
Well, yeah, that may be very true too. It's a whole lot easier to hire a new manager than to get a new
team.
Yeah. Who was? Well, you mentioned Mickey Mantle. You had a reputation for not having problems with Mantle. Is that true?
Yeah, I could. I had good luck with Mantle. You know, Mantle was a. He put up some outstanding numbers, but it just so happened that I could. Mantle was a high ball hitter, right-handed, and a low ball hitter, left-handed, and I had pretty good control, so I just didn't let him hit anything much, but the fastball kind of on the inside part of the plate and belt higher above, and I got along pretty good.
Yeah, a lot of guys didn't for that man.
But I'll tell you something, you don't win the Triple Crown. You know, he won the RBI and the batting title and the home runs all in 1 year, didn't he?
Yes, he did. 56 maybe.
And probably stole he could steal about as many bases as he wanted to, really.
Yeah, his knees, I think, stopped him a lot, but he was...
You know, just about like the Red Sox. Red Sox, are they going to steal in Fenway Park? What do they want to steal for?
Yeah.
Risk getting somebody thrown out when the next guy's liable to hit it over the fence or against the fence or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They're smart enough to not play that kind of ball.
Yeah, they mentioned the Red Sox low stolen base total every year, but you're right, there's no reason to do it.
Well, no. They could have, that's like to say that somebody kind of indicated that Ted Williams, in my opinion, could do everything, could excel in every phase. He was a good fielder. I've got home movies, of a ball being hit to him with a man on second base, and if you think that guy didn't charge that ball like a son of a gun and then play it exactly the way it ought to be played, I mean, it was picture perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and why, golly, I was watching television last night, and that guy didn't, you know, misjudge that fly ball and let it hit over his head. Oh, man.
Mm, yeah, it's...
I see some ungodly, and then a guy... Of course, it's a little windy there, but I mean, a guy pitching in Chicago the other day there, they couldn't catch fly ball.
Yeah.
And so he gets beat. Three fly balls were dropped. Oh, man. Gets beat on a no-hitter.
That'll happen sometimes, but that's, you know, that major leaguers aren't supposed to be doing that.
Well, I've seen, in the ball games that I've seen on television this year, I've seen a lot of balls dropped and a lot of balls that not caught that should have been caught.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I'm not talking about being critical of the present day player, because I don't care to be that. But you have to be fair.
Sure.
If you see something less than a major league play there, you got to recognize it as that.
You're seeing more of them every year, too. Who was the best pitcher you saw?
Best pitcher I ever saw was, yeah, Bob Feller.
Yeah, I bet.
Bob Feller was the best I ever saw. And I want to tell you, I saw a lot of good ones. I mean, there was a lot of good ones. Now, the Yankees had, all during my time there, or a lot of the time, during a lot of those years, Rashi and Reynolds were both money pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And they were good. They were good. They were confident. And of course, they had a fine team behind them. But they could go out and beat you in a big game. But then, gee whiz, you know, you take that Herb Score when he was, before he got arm trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Herb Score wasn't a polished pitcher yet, but he was on days that he could get his curveball over the plate, believe you me, he was next thing to unhittable.
I bet he would have been something if his arm had held up.
Oh my, I don't think there's any question, but because Herb Score is a truly quality person, Mm-hmm. He's about like that Hershiser or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
From out there in San Diego. They're really quality people. And so,
yeah, that was
we never saw much of Koufax, but I could see him, you know, we'd see him a little bit, but then, I mean, I could see him on television, and that son of a gun got to be a real pitcher with terrific stuff.
Yeah, the more he pitched, the better he got there in the later years. He was, I lived out there then and saw a lot of him. He was unbelievable.
You know, when I used to go to spring training and play against that ball club, I remember never forget that. The first year we went over there, I guess it's Vero Beach or whatever they were, they
yeah.
did spring training. Anyway, my Lord, they had all kinds of scouts around him, you know, all kinds of coaches and everything. And he was pitching, throwing in the batting cage to a catcher. Well, the next year, because anybody could see that he had terrific stuff, you see, but he couldn't get it over.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next year, there was fewer people there. We go over there, we're fewer people around him. And the third year, for heaven's sake, I don't even think they had anybody catching him. You know, I mean, no, he just was working. I think then probably everybody left him alone, had given up on him, and then he, you know, he kind of found himself. But that guy was, he was a real pitcher.
Yes, he was.
For a very, very brief time. But
5 years, 6 years, yeah.
He was something. Not just a thrower now. I'm not talking about a thrower. My Lord, you get guys coming in here and pitching in these, as relief pitchers now that they don't need to be a pitcher.
No.
They come in and they throw one pitch. They never won't throw over about two innings.
If that.
And they'll never go through the lineup more than once. So, I mean, each guy only gets to see that guy once.
Right.
So he throws them that one of his best pitch or whatever.
Yeah, it's they're making $1 million doing it, but it doesn't seem quite right.
It's big money. So the game is drastically different in that respect, you know?
You had your nephew, I believe, Bruce Berenni, is that right? He was looked like he was on the verge of being an awfully good pitcher when he finally had to hang it up. He was, Cincinnati's our home team down here, and not go up there, and he was a good hitter too, just like you were. But he looked awfully good some days until I guess it was his shoulder went.
That's right.
Yeah, that was a shame.
He ended up with two shoulder operations, but before he had to give it up. But what a shame, because that guy was right on the edge of being a. I went to see, we live in Florida a few months each winter, and he was pitching for the Mets at this time, and the advanced scout for the Mets was Dave Madison,
mm-hmm.
who had been a roommate of mine. So I was talking to Dave, and he said, I'll get you some tickets, and you come over and watch Berenni pitch. So we were over and went to Tampa to watch him pitch against Mario Soto and the Reds. So we were sitting there behind home plate, and there was Frank Cashin sitting there, along with some of the Augie Bush and some of the folks. Well, anyway, this Cashin told me, he said, if our team is going to be a contender this year, he said, Berenni's our number three man. He's got to have a good year. They had Darling and Gooden.
Mm-hmm.
And Berenni was considered to be their third man. Well, now, believe you me, if you're at that point where they are committed to having you be their third man in that rotation, you're going to get a lot of opportunities to pitch.
Oh, yes.
And if you get a lot of opportunities to pitch for a team as good as the New York Mets were, you're going to win a lot of games.
Sure.
Also, all you have to do is stay sound and get out there as often as you can. And you're going to have some good numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen to him. He started the season, I think, with a shutout, and then he pitched about five innings of shutout ball against the Pirates in Pittsburgh, and then they had to take him out because he had some inflammation in his shoulder, and I don't think he was ever the... He tried to pitch. They gave him a little extra rest then, and they started to pitch him, and St. Louis, and he couldn't cut it, and it was just downhill from there.
Yeah, and he pitched when he did have his regular time with the Reds. The Reds were a horrible team.
Yeah, they weren't. That was tough, a little tough there, but you know. But then he was. He could throw the ball hard and big, strong kid, and mm-hmm. he loved the game. You know, I mean, he didn't have a lot of distractions. He wasn't one of these guys that boozed it up or let the women come and see him all the time. You mm-hmm. know.
Yeah, it's a shame. I was sorry he didn't have a better career because I'd kind of followed him and. He really looked like he was on the verge of being a super pitcher there for a little while.
Yeah, the Mets offered him a 3-year deal that would have, if he would have, could have taken that, and his agent discouraged it, I guess, but if he could have taken that 3-year deal, he could have, and this, you know, he could have, and paid a little attention to the money, he could have been, you know, he could have done, he'd have been reasonably financially set the rest of his life.
Yeah, well, that's a shame.
It is, yeah.
There's no reason why you can't set yourself up if you do it right.
Oh, my golly. I hope to show.
You were elected to the Browns Hall of Fame. I think you were the first one elected. Is that right?
I was elected the first year.
That's what I mean, the first year, yeah.
The first year the St. Louis Browns fan club have a pretty active organization there, and they have a banquet every year where they induct any additional members.
Mm-hmm.
But I was elected to that. I was one of the charter members. I was put in that the first year, and I was elected to the Ohio Hall of Fame, Baseball Hall of Fame here a couple of years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that. Good. Well, you deserve it.
Well, that's as close to the, to be in the, oh, I'm in the Fort, because I got my start in Fort Wayne. Well, I'm in Fort Wayne's Baseball Hall of Fame, and I've been in that St. Louis Browns. But I won in Ohio. I mean, the Ohio Baseball Hall of Fame kind of meant something to me. I was kind of glad to get inducted into that, because that's as close as I'll get to Cooperstown.
Well, that's a big honor in itself.
Yeah, well, I appreciated that.
It's been 46 years, I guess, since you started playing professionally. Been a lot of changes in the game. What do you think the biggest change is?
Well, two big changes, I think, is one. One is the going to the specialist. I mean, uh-huh. you know, having the middle relievers and the closers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, they take people out of the ball game. They could be pitching a 2-hit shutout, but they go to the, they pitch their 108th pitch or something, and out they come.
Right.
And then they bring in a guy who's making another $1 million. To be the middleman, and then the setup man, and then in a little bit they bring in this warm up the closer, who's making $2 million.
Yeah.
And they bring him in because he's getting paid to do that, and that's his specialty. So that's the way it goes. So in the process, a guy never pitches a complete game, and the process also, I don't know if they get if they are ever strong enough to pitch. I don't know. Robin Roberts told me, he said, I every time we'd see him in the spring, he'd be throwing. If he didn't pitch in the game, he'd be on the sidelines. And mm-hmm. I asked him one spring, you know, why is that? And he said, well, he said, I pitched 300 innings in the season. He said, I get paid more because I pitched 300 innings. And he said, you don't get your arm strong enough to pitch 300 innings by resting it.
Right.
He said, you build it up strong by exercising it, by using it, by throwing. So he said, that's what I do in the spring, so that when the season comes, I can throw 300 innings. Another thing, the big change is the artificial turf. You know, that makes a drastic change. My Lord have mercy. That makes a drastic change in the game.
In everything. Hitting, fielding, running, everything.
Right. Everything.
Pitching. You want them to hit fly balls instead of putting the ball on that artificial turf.
But you you take a guy. So I think about that. I think about that. I was a sinker ball pitcher, sinker slider ball pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, you know, the ground ball. I mean, that was the thing. But I think now, my Lord have mercy, if I threw that dead blame sinker up there and I got him to hit it in the ground, he'd probably bounce over the third baseman's head.
Yeah, and yeah, infield's got to play 15 feet farther back.
It's a drastic change. So the way they go about handling the pitching staff, where they have the specialists that they have a starter and then a middle relief and then a setup man and then a closer.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so that's drastically different, and then the artificial turf also.
Yep.
And then, of course, the money, that's the number one difference.
Oh, that's... What was your top salary?
Most I ever made in any one year, most I ever signed for in any one year was $28,000. I made a few thousand in commercials.
Yeah.
But $28,000 was my top salary.
Wow.
The first year I signed in 1948 with the Browns, I think I still have a contract around here, but anyway, it called for $3,500. Now, there was a minimum started in 1947, so, and this was in 48, so the major leagues had a minimum of $5,000. But my contract called for $3,500 because I know they expected to send me out.
Uh-huh.
And so if they farmed me out to San Antonio or someplace, they would have paid me at the rate of $3,500 for the year.
Wow, now it's $100,000 minimum.
That's $100,000. And then the next year I made, after that year that you talked about where I relieved and started and pitched a lot, why, then I made $7,000.
Oh, boy, big money.
Yeah.
that's hard to imagine the difference. Talked to one fellow, Carl Scheib.
Carl Scheib.
Yeah.
He was a good hitting pitcher.
Yes, he was. I talked with him, oh, I don't know when it's been now. It's been several weeks ago. He said he'd play today just for the pension plan. The heck with the salary.
Well, yeah.
That's...
The pension plan is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in on those meetings, but from what I hear, what I can read, a person with 10 years now, that's the maximum that you need to get the top pay.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are 60 years old, when you're 60 years old and if you have 10 years of major league service at a reasonable pay scale, which everybody has, but averaging over $600,000 now per man, your retirement benefit starting at age 60 is in excess of $99,000.
Oh, boy.
Now, that was in advance of the new contract that increased the payments into this plan from $32 or $33 million to $55 million. The owners are now putting, starting this year, $55 million into that plan.
Ooh.
And that, and the benefits that they already had were not generated on the $55 million, but it was generated on what had been being paid in there, which was either $32 or $33 million in that area.
Mm. It's the figures are just absolutely hard, impossible to fathom when it gets up to numbers like that.
See, we had to play 5 years to qualify. I'm
right.
Talking to a guy over there at Indianapolis, a guy by the name of Warren Hacker. He didn't get in enough time to qualify for the pension plan.
He didn't have 5 years in?
I guess not.
Well, be darned. I thought he did.
Well, I'm not positive about that. It might have been somebody else. I tried talking to Tracy Stallard. Do you remember Tracy Stallard?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Number 61.
Everything anybody talks to him about, they always say, you're the guy that hit that, threw that 61st home run.
That's all he'll be remembered for. He was a useful pitcher for a few years, but...
Sure.
I remember him. Yeah, Hacker had the time, and it wasn't him.
He had more years in, didn't he?
Yeah.
He pitched for the Cubs?
Yeah, he had...
How many years did he get in?
He had parts of 12. I guess when you take the full years, it probably looks like he probably had 7 or 8.
I think he did say he had about 6 full.
That may be
it. He had to get in so many days in order to be counted a year.
Right. Well, he was up and down for 4 years. I guess, and then later in his career he was sent down early because he only had 9 games in. But he had 1, 2, 3, 4, what looks like 5 complete years and then parts of about 5 or 6 others.
Well, I talked to a lot of guys over there, but I was thinking that it was him, but anyway, it wasn't. He anyway, now you get credit for whatever, however many days, you know, you don't have to be there so long in order to qualify.
No, it is.
And you've qualified for one day.
And it's great. I've got an 18-year-old son who wants to play baseball, and I wish him, I want to be his agent. I want him to be great, and I want to be his agent. We can both retire.
Gotcha.
did you save souvenirs from your career?
Oh, not. I didn't do very well there.
No, weren't a big collector?
No, I didn't know enough to do that. Just for instance, each fall I'd take 2 uniforms and from the Browns, you know, and jacket and a duffel bag and go on a barnstorming tour with Satchel Paige and his people. Or for next spring when I go spring training, I'd just take them back to them. Wasn't that dumb?
Well, it's honest.
Yeah, but that was so dumb. They didn't know what they do with them. You know, you didn't wear those. They might have sent them down to their, down there to Little Rock, or not Little Rock, but Pine Bluff, Arkansas, where they had their minor league camp or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was so dumb.
Well, what could you get for a St. Louis Browns uniform today? The way people are collecting.
I see one time when I got one of the publications you're referring to, that where some guy down at in Tampa had it. Was advertising, taking bids. He said he had an Edgar or St. Louis Browns uniform, and he wasn't saying he'd sell it, but he was taking bids on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know it, but it would be worth thousands.
Oh, I bet thousands easily.